What's going on, everybody? Welcome into a Friday edition of Texans All Access, a TGIFFFFF. I don't know. Put as many Fs as you want into this Football Friday edition. Glad to be with you. I am your host, John Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter, and we are less than 48 hours away. Less than 48 hours away from taking on the Browns. We are less than 24 hours away from getting on that bird and flying to Cleveland, where the weather report for Sunday, keep my fingers crossed, because you know how things can change quickly right there in Lake Erie. But right now, 78 and sunny on Sunday, and hopefully it stays that way, because that'll be the complete antithesis of what it was last year. Sleet and hail sideways with 50 to 55 mile an hour winds. So hopefully this will be a little bit different. In fact, those winds last year about knocked me over. Now, I was not in the greatest of shape, because when we returned from Cleveland 2 days later, I ended up having back surgery. That said, 50 to 55 miles an hour were just pounding us last year. So hopefully the weather will be quite different there in Cleveland. It will be quite different in Cleveland, because there will be fans on hand filling the stadium. Now, there were some fans last year, but just a smattering, as you guys obviously know, like we had here in Houston throughout the year of the COVID 2020. But there will be a full house, and this is the first time. And it's funny, Kevin Stefanski said this in his press availability today or yesterday. It's like, this is the first time he's coached a game in that environment there in Cleveland. So very interesting stuff going on with the trip to Cleveland, take on the Browns. 0-1, lost last week to the Kansas City Chiefs 33-29. We will break this game down in full. We will do it with Coach David Culley. Happy birthday, Coach. Hopefully you had a great one. I don't think the number's 66, but yeah, who's counting at this point? Coach Culley will join us with Mark Vandermeer, as we do each and every Friday. We'll also have Brandon Cooks on the show with a little deep slant one-on-one. Danny Amendola, man, this is a show for receivers, huh? Danny Amendola is going to meet up with a guy that spent a lot of time with him prior to the draft back in 2009-ish, I think it was. 2008, maybe earlier than that. Danny Amendola and Drew Doherty. Ooh, man, Danny, Drew, Doherty. Love it. Alliteration. Danny Amendola catches up with Drew Doherty. They did a lot when they were together at Texas Tech. Danny's a player heading off to the draft. Drew doing his work there for Lubbock TV stations and also for Texas Tech. So they have a history. That's going to be a fun interview. I'm going to give you my keys to the game. Then Mark is going to stop back by and have our men behind the mics, two longtime voices for the teams. Mark's been the only voice of the Texans. And Jim Donovan, the voice of the Cleveland Browns. Looking forward to that. I will make predictions straight up and against the spread for every game this weekend. I love doing that. I don't care if I'm 0-16, which I'm not, but I love talking about the games, so that's a good way to do it, straight up and against the spread. And then we'll go back to Drew. So we got a little different flavor of Danny Amendola. And first, we're going to get Drew's dozen. Then we're going to get kind of the lead up to the game, pregame football-y sort of stuff with Danny Amendola. So we got a lot of everything happening on this show. So let's start it with our hot reads, brought to you by Geico. 15 minutes can save you 15% or more on car insurance. And we start the show each and every Friday with the head coach of your Houston Texans, David Culley, with the voice of the Texans, Mark Vandermeer. Mark, take it away.
Coach, how did preparation go for this one? How was the week of practice for you?
It's been good. It's always good going to the next week after a win. There were things that we needed to clean up, and those things are always easier to clean up after a win than they are a loss. But it was a good week of practice. Yeah, I mean, we're playing a very, very good football team. It's one of those weeks where you don't really have to motivate. This is a playoff-caliber football team that just played a playoff-caliber game against the Kansas City Chiefs that they could have very easily have won. So we're looking forward to it.
Well, tell me, I know you go into every game thinking we got to stop the run, but it's especially important this week against this bunch, right?
Well, this bunch has probably the two best running backs on a team in this league, on one team. And they run the football. They do a great job of establishing the run. They do a great job with their play action pass. They got a quarterback that's very good at it. They've got skill positions all over the place with receiver and tight end. And they do a good job of spreading the ball around, and they do a good job of being able to get big plays down the field. And Mark, I mean, it's one of those games where you got to be right on everything because they can hit you a bunch of different ways.
Well, you played clean last week. I know you want to play clean this week on offense. And the ability to run the ball is so important, obviously, for you. But you also made some big plays last week. How do you handle the risk factor versus wanting to keep it clean and not make mistakes?
Well, when you're running the ball the way we were able to run the ball this past week, Mark, it allows you to be able to get those kind of plays down the field. When you're not running the ball as well and you're a little bit inconsistent, and a lot of our big plays basically came off of play-action passes or run-action passes. Mm-hmm. And when you're running the ball, it allows the defense to be able to have to play another guy up in the box. And when they do, we know we got one-on-ones down the field, and we were very fortunate last week to be able to hit a couple of those. And we'll have to do the same thing this week, but that is all predicated on how we run the football.
Yeah, their front seems very good defensively. They can get after the quarterback.
Yeah, they've got two guys on the end there that are very, very good. And one of them we know here very well who's played mm-hmm. here, Clowney. And then Miles obviously is one of the premier rushers in this game. And that's why I see it more important to be able to make those guys play their gaps and not be able to pin their ears back and just get up the field on us and try to rush the passer. They're going to have to defend the run on us, and hopefully with that, we can control that a little bit.
How about special teams? You're outside this time, no longer perfect conditions, although the weather should be pretty good.
Yeah, this time of year, we're very fortunate to be going up at Cleveland at this time. You know how I can get off of that lake up there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, our kicking game has been solid all year. You know, the first ball game, it was excellent. We were very good at pinning those guys back with our punt team. And, mm-hmm. you know, again, our field goal, obviously, we were able to be able to get some points off of that with basically a new kicker, which mm-hmm. did a nice job for us. Joy did a nice job for us. And we just need to be solid right there. I think, though, the one thing in the kicking game that we weren't quite as good as we needed to be last week, and it didn't show up on film as far as hurting us, but our field goal protection was not as good as it should have been. You know, there was a little bit of leakage right there, and this is a crew that's capable of being able to rush and rush very well, so we've got to be able to clean that up too.
Taking a team on the road, is there something bonding about that? Of course, you'd rather be at home, but you against the world, loud crowd, dealing with all that kind of stuff, but being together as a group.
Mark, that's why our mantra is always team, team, team. When you travel, your team travels with you.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, as you just mentioned, we don't have those wonderful Houston Texans fans all up there like we had this past week, but we have ourselves. And basically, it's one of those that you just said about bonding. I mean, it is us against the world. Mm-hmm. But we always know that we got each other's back. We always know if something happens, those guys are right there for you. And basically, the people in the stands can't play for you. They can help you. They can help you from an emotional standpoint. But we know our sideline and those guys that are playing got each other's back. And basically, that's what we rely on.
And I know last week, as can happen when you're breaking in the new dogs on the sideline, the new shoes, the new gear, the new equipment. Coach has got himself a new pair of shoes to help with those feet. So that was great news. Now, a guy who's got some of the sweetest feet out there is Brandon Cooks. Big game last week, 5 catches, 132 yards. The last 3 games for the Texans, he's averaged 146 yards, 7 catches, and a touch. That's his average over the last 3 games he's played as a Texan. All 3 at NRG Stadium. Hopefully he's going to take that out on the road against the Cleveland Browns. And Brandon had a chance to sit down with our good friend DP Sidhu for a little deep slant interview of the week brought to you by Xfinity. I love when DP has a chance to go a little bit deeper with the players. And this time she does that with BC13, Brandon Cooks.
It's the Deep Slant 101 presented by Xfinity. We're chatting with wide receiver Brandon Cooks, year 8, now a 7,000-yard receiver for his career. Did you know that you've surpassed 7,000 yards? Do you check your stats throughout games?
I didn't know that, actually. I didn't know that. I knew I was close or I was up there somewhere, but I didn't know I surpassed it this week.
You just passed 7,000. I once talked to a player who said during the games a long time ago, he would check his stats throughout the game. You passed.
Nah, I ain't doing that.
You're not doing that? Because you passed 100 yards before halftime, yeah. Which is the most that you've ever done in a first half as well. So against the Jaguars, do you sort of get that sense in a game that it's going to be that sort of a game when you're putting up numbers like that? You know, what is your mentality, because you've had now 3 games back-to-back-to-back with 100 yards receiving going back to 2020.
Yeah, I mean, for me, anytime I line up and get ready to go on Sundays, I'm thinking it's going to be one of those games. Now, if that happens, You know, it all depends. But that's always going to be my mindset. That's going to be one of those days.
I asked Tyrod Taylor after the game because you had those two really long catches that led to touchdowns, and they were the two longest plays of the game, just about his chemistry with you. And he said that he really trusts you matchup-wise. Yeah. So what goes into to building that trust? You guys haven't been playing that long together.
Yeah, that's a great point. But I think just the training camp, you know, being there day in and day out, you know, working on the little things and fixing mistakes, I think that's how you build that trust with your quarterback, especially on a quarterback that you've never played with before. You got to really, you know, trust that practice is where you're going to get a lot of that experience from.
We used to watch practice, and Mark Vandermeer, who does the play-by-play, whenever he'd see you make a catch, he would say, bubble wrap, because he just did not want to see any more of you. He's like, I don't want him to get hurt. Just bubble wrap him and put him away. But you were out there every single day in camp. And then I actually noticed, like, a lot of times on drives in between plays, you'd kind of come over to the side. You look at the iPad. You'd be talking to Tyrod. You guys would be just going over the meticulous details. And I always thought it's just like one catch of one training camp practice of many days. Is that how you build that trust? I mean, is that why you do that on
Absolutely.
Every single play?
You know, I think that's once time you get ahead of the game. Obviously, you look at film after practice, but if you can sneak in a couple reps on film, you know, during practice, that's always going to be huge because you can talk about it. Just in case it comes up in practice again that day, you can get it fixed right then and there.
You've played with a lot of quarterbacks over the years. You know, what are some of your tricks for developing that chemistry? Because I've heard that sometimes quarterbacks and receivers, they hang out outside of football. They get on the same page. Like, what are some of the things you've done over the years?
I think my thing is, you know, throwing in the off season, you know, with my quarterbacks, but at the same time, figuring out what they like and trying to mold my game to that. Because obviously the quarterbacks is making decisions. Yeah, they got to be comfortable. So I got to figure out what my quarterback likes and make sure I do that. And then at the end of the day, you know, put my signature on it as well.
All right, so David Culley says that you play like a really big receiver. You play like a big receiver. You go for those contested catches. How does one play bigger than their size?
I think at the end of the day, it's just all about heart. And, you know, for me, that's what it's always been. And then at the end of the day, just leverage. You know, this game is about leverage. You know, you think about defensive tackles and offensive line. If I can get underneath the guy, no matter how big I am, you know, I got a chance. And so I take that same type of mentality when I'm playing as a receiver.
How much better do you think you can be as a receiver? When you watch other games, you know, are you watching other receivers to see how
Absolutely.
You can get better?
Absolutely. And I think there's a lot more, you know, for me to be able to get better. There's a lot more in front of me, and I just got to continue to work at it and, you know, perfect my craft.
I saw an interview with you once a long time ago. You were asked, if you weren't playing football, what would you be doing? Mm-hmm. Do you remember what you said?
Was it photography?
No. You said you would do acting.
Oh,
specifically theater.
Yeah.
Do you remember this?
Because
you did it in college.
I did a lot of that.
I did not
know
that.
Yes, I did. But that's one thing for sure. I'll be somewhere by a camera, behind a camera, or in front of it. So, yeah.
So what are some of the roles that you played in college?
You know, I've never got to the chance to be able to actually play a role, you know, in a play because I was playing ball. And those classes typically were during the fall time. But, you know, I got a couple roles out there, you know what I'm saying? I don't know if we want to talk about them right now.
Oh, really? You got stuff in the works?
Nah. Yeah, we got to lay that by.
Do you sing, too?
I try to sing. I'm the guy around the locker room singing. I'm not saying I can sing well, but I'm singing.
All right, so if you could insert yourself into any Broadway musical, which one would you put yourself into?
Oh, without a doubt, Book of Mormons.
The Book of Mormon. Okay.
Yeah,
is that like
one. Comedy? And that was a good one. And a lot of people played, you know, obviously different roles. That or Hamilton. You know, I
was
going to
say Hamilton.
I like Hamilton.
I see you as a Thomas Jefferson
type.
Thomas.
Yeah, that would be a good one. That would be a good one.
All right, so what do you think about this team? It's so many different players coming together on offense. I know Mark Ingram has talked so highly of you because the two of you played together with New Orleans. What really excites you about this offense?
I got to say how we all play for one another. I know that's a cliche thing to say, but I'll tell you. You talk about receivers in the run game blocking, you know, running backs in the pass game blocking, and those offensive line up front, how physical they are. I think we just gel so well throughout this training camp, and we trust one another, and we plan for one another.
All right, looking forward to seeing it, Brandon. Always a pleasure catching up with you.
Nice talking to you. Thank you for having me.
Now, obviously, I'm very biased. I think that Brandon Cooks has been phenomenal since he got here. He was phenomenal last week. But if you are not a Browns fan or a Texans fan, you just watch football, the joy of football, that kind of stuff. You love matchups. There are two matchups this week of just unbelievable talent on each side. Laramie Tunsil going against Myles Garrett and Brandon Cooks more than likely facing Denzel Ward. I would imagine wherever 13 goes, number 21 is going to follow. The other Browns corners are rookie Greg Newsom, very talented dude and going to have an exceptional career with the Cleveland Browns. But I think that's going to be a little bit of a stretch to run one-on-one with Brandon Cooks. I think that's going to be Denzel Ward. So Ward v. Cooks, Tunsil v. Garrett, two massive matchups to watch one-on-one. All right, let's get to our next hot read, and that is going to be the Friday Injury Report, a.k.a. the Status Report. Who's in? Who's out? Who's questionable? Who's going to raise some question marks as to who's going to be there? Now, no one out for the Texans that we weren't expecting. Two questionable. Did not participate today. Kamu Grugier-Hill dealing with an illness. He is questionable. Also, and this is great news, the fact that he's questionable and the fact that he's back at practice today, and that is Farrell Brown dealing with an ankle and a shoulder. He was a limited participant. Questionable. So, Kamu Grugier-Hill, Farrell Brown, both questionable. Full participants, Lonnie Johnson, Desmond King, and Andre Roberts. They are all three in and ready to go. Now, the Browns side is a little dicier. I told you earlier in the week, and Kevin Stefanski made it official, and Andrew Berry made it official, Odell Beckham Jr. out dealing with a knee. Also out for the Browns is swing tackle Chris Hubbard. Hubbard came into the game against the Chiefs when Jedrick Wills went out of the game dealing with an ankle. Hubbard is out. Wills is questionable. So the swing tackle for the Browns is out. Wills questionable. The other offensive tackle, Jack Conklin, limited participant today, but he is not listed as out or questionable, so he's in. So Conklin in. Hubbard out. Wills questionable. Those are the three tackles the Browns have. Also on the offensive line, J.C. Treader actually got back at practice today in a limited capacity for the first time. He is listed as questionable. Michael Dunn, backup offensive lineman, also questionable. Two other questionables, and I think these are big for the Browns. Although he was a full participant in practice, Troy Hill, the corner who plays nickel about as well as anybody you're going to find, is questionable. Anthony Schwartz, the rookie out of Auburn. This is somebody that I highlighted in Telestrator this week for KPRC Game Day because of the impact he has with his speed. He's got track man speed. He ran 10-1 in high school. He was a Florida high school state champion, 100 and 200 meters. He can absolutely smoke. And, I mean, it translates over to the football field, too. At Auburn, it never really clicked because, at that time, Bo Nix, young quarterback, just never really kind of got it together. Now, it sounds like Bo might be ready for Saturday against Penn State. But that's a different story altogether. And that I got to worry about in my college brain. That's my right side, the college brain. The left side is the Texans. Anyways, point being, Anthony Schwartz is one to keep an eye on. They're already down Odell Beckham Jr. If Schwartz is out of the game, the Browns can play bully ball. But the one thing they won't be able to do is play speed ball because they won't have Odell Beckham and Anthony Schwartz. Those two are the fastest two guys they've got at the receiver group. Now, the other tight ends create mismatches because of speed they have, but you're not talking about Anthony Schwartz. You just blow the top off and go downfield and get it. It becomes serious, serious bully ball if Schwartz does not play in this particular game. So that is definitely something we'll be watching on up till about 10:30 local time, 10:30 Houston time, 11:30 local time when the inactives come out. We will see if any of these questionables turn into out for the Browns. But Jedrick Wills has not practiced all week long, even though he is listed as questionable. Michael Dunn, so the offensive lineman, 1, 2, 3... Three offensive linemen listed as questionable. One listed as out. One wide receiver out. One wide receiver questionable. And then Troy Hill, the DB, listed as questionable. So some guys banged up, went through it against the Kansas City Chiefs. And we'll see what. Because some of those guys, like I said, being out, those are key to a number of matchups on Sunday against the Texans. So for your Texans, just too questionable. Kamu Grugier-Hill and Farrell Brown, both big ones in different ways. So we'll see how those two are. Hopefully, both of them are ready to go. But nobody out, which is great, great news, unlike last week when we had to sit with, or play without Lonnie Johnson Jr. Okay, that's going to do it for our Hot Reads brought to you by Geico. 15 minutes can definitely save you 15% or more on car insurance. Coming up, it's a little bit of a reunion between two guys that spent some formative years at Texas Tech, Danny Amendola and Drew Doherty. That's next right here on Texans All Access. Welcome back to this Friday edition of Texans All Access, this TGIFF edition of Texans All Access. I'm your host, John Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter, and a big fan of the two gentlemen that are about to arrive on this show. One plays NFL football. One is my in-the-lab partner and one of my great friends, Drew Doherty. The one who plays football, that's Danny Amendola. Now, Drew and Danny go back a ways. When Danny was coming out of Texas Tech to get ready for the draft, Drew, working in Lubbock at the time and doing a lot with Texas Tech, spent a lot of time with Danny, and it's fun for them to reconnect many years later as they're both here in Houston with the Texans together. So let's do a little Drew's Dozen and catch up with Danny Amendola alongside Drew Doherty. Drew.
All right, well, this is a fun one. Drew Doherty with Danny Amendola, and before we get too far down the road, the last time you and I did a one-on-one interview, it was the spring of 2008. I think you were back in Lubbock. You'd been off training, getting ready for the NFL. Mm-hmm. And I think you'd just done a pro day at Texas Tech, but you were back, and
yep.
You kind of, the hay was in the barn. You didn't have to do much more for about a month. And yep. Or I think it was outside of a rental house on 19th Street. So it's great to have you back. Look how far you've come. I mean, that seems like 20 years ago.
Yeah, I actually remember that time. We spent a lot of great times in Lubbock, man.
Yeah.
We always appreciate all the work that you did there. And
thanks.
Lubbock's a special place, man.
It sure is. That's a great way to put it. It was a fun time, and you were part of a hell of a player on some great teams. So this is a treat to see you back. Okay, once you found out you were going to be a Houston Texan, who was the first call you made?
I called my mom, and she lives in Dallas, and she's excited, and she loves coming to the games, coming to football. And, you know, it took me a second to kind of get into my apartment situation here, so she didn't get to come to the first game, so she got to watch it on television. But she's excited for the next home game, and hopefully we get to have some family in town. And being from Houston is awesome. You know, I got a lot of friends and family here, obviously. So,
sure.
This has definitely been a great homecoming for me.
No doubt. Okay. Your first NFL touchdown came against the Texans in 2009 when you were a St. Louis Ram.
Yep.
Your first NFL touchdown pass, so you caught that one with the Rams, came against the Texans, the pass, 2018 when you were a Dolphin.
Dolphin, yep.
So are you going to have your first NFL touchdown run with the Texans at some point?
That's a good point, man. That's a good point. Hopefully, yeah, that would be awesome. Hopefully, as much as I can contribute to this team, putting points on the board, it's fine with me in whatever capacity that may be.
And shoot, I leave out your Super Bowl win comes here in Houston as well. You've had some good times here. It's good to have you back. Your most overrated food in the world, though, is?
Overrated food in the world is, gosh, that's a good question. I would say shrimp.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's just kind of like whatever you cook it in is going to taste like.
Just not a shrimp guy.
I mean, I like it, but you got to just kind of, you got to dress it up. You know what I'm saying?
To each his own. That's your opinion.
Yeah.
We can all have opinions in this world, Dan.
Yeah.
What's your favorite exercise in the weight room and what's your least favorite exercise?
Favorite exercise in the weight room is squat because it helps me tremendously. Mm-hmm. My least favorite is probably the neck machine. I hate that neck machine.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? What are we doing?
I got a pencil neck, so I've never used it. I saw it and I looked at it and I was like, no,
yeah.
Thanks.
Then you gotta get custom fitted shirts. And it's just like it's a hassle, man.
Or you could say then you gotta get custom fitted shirt. You know if you want to do it that way. Tyrod Taylor also said squat, so you have something in common with Tyrod.
Sweet.
I've done some research on you. Your first job was evidently in a batting cage.
It was. It was batting cage. I was underage at the time, probably 14 years old.
I'm not going to dime you out.
No, it was on my only way to kind of get some cash under the table. I was answering phones, cleaning, fixing the machines, picking up the baseballs. And I was playing for the owner of the batting cage was my traveling baseball coach.
Yeah.
So he kind of, hooked it up. And obviously I was with him all day and practice and games. And gave me my first job.
Best part of the job was what?
The best, I could hit for free.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Free lessons, free everything, baseball.
What was the worst part?
24/7, picking up the baseballs. There's 500 baseballs on the ground. You got to pick them up. We got to find a fun way to do it.
So how far did you take you, I guess you played in high school all the way?
Yep, played in high school. I reached All-State honors and then signed a letter of intent to go to Texas Tech. And then my batting average pummeled after that. I just tried to hit home runs. And then just tried to have fun with it my senior year.
So you were all football. You never really wanted it.
Yeah. We love baseball, man, growing up. It's just really mentally football was my gig.
Yeah, that's understandable. Yep. Okay. Who's your favorite Astro of all time? I'm guessing you're an Astros guy.
Oh, I love the Astros. Craig Biggio was my favorite player. I played second base growing up. He started as a catcher.
Yep.
And then he moved to second base. He was my favorite player. Part of the Sunshine Kids, I think his foundation is. And he did a lot for the community, obviously. He was a staple in the community in you know, his philanthropic ways. And then also he could crush a baseball, and he played really good D. So I loved his pine tar. I loved how he played dirty, stole bases.
He's a rugged, gritty player. In addition to being amazing, he had that attitude.
No doubt. I loved his approach, his whole game.
All right. If you had made it and pursued it, and you're 13, 14 in the bigs, what would your walk-up song be to the plate?
Probably the Andy Griffith theme song.
Why?
It gets you in the right frame of mind, and it's just a slight little whistle.
The whistle, yeah. That would throw people off because it's usually. That would be different.
They get the crowd going a little bit.
Favorite Halloween candy to get because it's on the way. It's coming up.
I mean, obviously the bigger candy bars in regard to size, but I love Mr. Goodbar. It's just simple. It's, you know, the chocolate's really good, and then obviously the peanuts in it is fantastic, and it's pretty flawless.
Which one, when you saw it go in your bucket or your bag, were you just like, damn it, I didn't want this one?
Oh, the coconut
mounds.
Yeah. I don't mess with the mounds too much. The coconut flavor, it kind of tastes like suntan lotion to me.
That's right. Do you eat suntan lotion?
No, but it just brings me back to like a bad situation.
All right. What was your best Halloween costume ever?
My best Halloween costume, my mom got me like this Target, like cheap ninja outfit, but it came with these sweet nunchucks, padded obviously. And I just felt like I could kick anybody's butt that year.
With nunchucks, yeah, you can.
Yeah.
I always do. I always pronounce them with num with an M. So yeah. It's nun, I think.
Nunchucks, yeah.
Yeah,
that works.
I always made it bad. Okay, you're from the Woodlands.
Yep.
Greatest concert you've ever been to up there in the Woodlands? Because, you know, you've been around.
Yeah.
What's the best one you saw there, though? Because there have been a lot of good ones there.
I can rattle. I've been there. I've seen probably 10 shows there. My first ever show was probably the best one. It was Blink 182.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of interesting smells that night. I think I was 12 years old, and it was my first memory being at Cynthia Woods Mitchell Pavilion, and Dave Matthews Band was sweet, too. I was a little older. I think I was 18. It was raining. It was probably Blink 182 or Dave Matthews Band was.
Yeah, those are good ones. Yep. Those are all timers right there. Okay, you played at Texas Tech.
Yep.
You played with Michael Crabtree. You had 1,000 yards the year he had.
Yep.
You know, his first year.
Yep.
Mike Leach was your head coach.
Yes, sir.
When you get asked about Mike Leach, what's the first Mike Leach story that you tell? And I know you have 7 zillion, but what's the first one that typically comes to the forefront for you?
That's a good question. They just kind of asked me, you know, is he really as quirky as he is? And you know, his magic tricks, his obsession with pirates and swing your sword. And,
right.
And the best thing about Coach Leach is that he can add so many different perspectives in your life on even the simplest route. So you got a flag, a simple post route, flag route, whatever. He'll kind of relate it to like women's softball in some degree.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, it'll come back and you'll really get a great point out of it. He is a brilliant mind, obviously, but adds a lot of perspective and, you know, obviously very thankful for him.
So after all those meetings that you're there for, and I'm sure that they kind of meandered at times, when you get to the NFL, was it pretty jarring, or was it, hey, I'm a coach's son, because your dad is a head coach, a very successful head coach, by the way. Mm-hmm. Do you just remember that and know that, hey, I was kind of in a unique situation there in college?
No doubt. And you know, I went to Tech for the air raid offense so I could, you know, hopefully catch, you know, a lot of footballs and have fun. I never really thought I was going to play in the NFL until the opportunity arose. But, you know, I wanted to go to college. I wanted to have fun and I feel like the lessons that my father instilled in me kind of were ahead of my time when I got to college.
Sure.
So I was ready to go when I got there and you know, in work, in the weight room and training room and stuff like that. So, you know, it was a very unique situation, obviously there, an awesome time. And then kind of when I got to the NFL, it was kind of the same scene for me. Just worry about what you can control and
do everything you can do. Catch the ball, return kicks, punts, hold if you need to, yep. Throw it if you need to, stuff yep. like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Just try to bring value to the team in any way you can and unselfishly try to help the team win.
Who do you keep in touch with from those Lubbock days? Anybody?
Cliff Kingsbury, good friend of mine, great player there, great coach, obviously. Crab, I see Crab. I haven't talked to Crab in a couple years. Usually see him when we play against him, and I'm really happy to hear he's going in the Ring of Honor this year.
Yeah.
You know, talked to Graham Harrell a couple days ago. He's doing great things over at USC. Louis Vasquez. Talked to him about a month ago. Manny Ramirez, Joe Filani. A
couple good offensive linemen, really good receiver.
Joe Absolutely, Filani. Yeah. Cody Campbell, the Acock brothers, all these guys, man. We got a tight-knit group, obviously. Yeah. When you're in Lubbock, you're out in the middle of nowhere, and you kind of got to stick together because you got nobody else. So it's an awesome, awesome tight-knit community. Obviously, Eric Morris.
You know, he's doing great.
Great coaching.
Coach Eric
Coach
Morris.
Eric Morris, exactly. So. We all kind of keep in contact, and it's awesome, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, of all the Spider-Mans, which one's the best, Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, or Tom Holland?
I would say Tobey Maguire, but I got to be honest with you. I've never seen any of them. The fact that I think it was Tobey Maguire that came down upside down and kissed the girl.
Oh, yeah, that was like the first one, right?
Yeah, that was the only scene that kind of stuck with me. I might have seen it in the trailer, but that was a pretty slick move.
Danny Amendola, you're a pretty slick dude. Thanks for coming on and doing Drew's Dozen. It's always good
Anytime.
To see you. We're glad you're here. Best of luck, Drew. Moving forward.
Appreciate it.
We can definitely add Danny Amendola to the list of undrafted free agents that have found their way to Houston and made an impact. AJ Boye, Arian Foster, Dylan Cole. Over the years, we've seen plenty of them. From an NFL global perspective, Danny's probably one of the great undrafted free agents of all time. I'm just glad he's here. Man, Drew said it best. Glad you're here. When we go there Sunday to take on the Cleveland Browns, what are the keys to getting a victory? Well, I've got my keys to the game next right here on Texans All Access. One of the great things that I get a chance to do every single week is sit down with the Texans' future opponent that weekend and try and come up with after watching, obviously, I've seen our game. I've seen it back on video a couple times. And then watching film of the opponent, I always try and come up with my keys to the game. Here's what I think are going to be key and vital to getting a win against the future opponent. Well, the future opponent is the Cleveland Browns. That game will be Sunday. You can hear it right here on Sports Radio 610 starting at noon. Obviously, we've got pregame before that, 9 to 12. If you're in Cleveland going to the game, the game's at 1. Keep that in mind. Don't show up at noon thinking, wait, where's the game? Well, it'll happen. It'll just be 1 p.m. So if you show up at noon, that's cool. Just know that it won't be until 1 o'clock that everything really kicks off. And hopefully it won't be pushed back to 1:35 like it was last year because of a 35-minute delay due to weather. Hopefully the weather is going to be fine. So let's dive in. Here are my keys to a victory over the Cleveland Browns this weekend. And let's start with the Texans defense facing the Browns offense. It's an offense that's sixth in the NFL in rushing, 153 yards per game, passing 304 yards per game. That's 11th in the league. And total offense, 457. That's second in the league. They did have two key turnovers last week, lost a fumble. And then they also an interception. That's two. They should have had third. I don't know if should have is the right way of saying it, but they could have had a third. And that was the fumble of the punter. Now, he picked it back up, but he got tackled short of the first down marker. But that might have been as big a turnover, I say that in air quotes, as any of them. This is an offense, as I go through, when I do this on Know Your Foe, I always put in all caps players that are new to the team, and then I put all caps in italics for rookies. There's one player that is new to this starting 11. One. And then I put in some key non-starters, they've all been around. Kareem Hunt, Harrison Bryant, Donovan Peoples-Jones, Rashad Higgins. I mean, they've all been around. These guys have all been around. This is an offense that knows each other and knows it very, very well. So, what are the keys to slowing this Browns offense down? Number one, in all caps, big boy pads needed. I really wanted to find some alliteration to go with it, but I just couldn't do it, to be honest. But big boy pads are needed against these guys. Why? Well, you know, Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt. Those guys are always fresh. And what I mean by that is there's always a back getting rest on the sideline while there is a guy running the ball right down your throats on the field. Kareem Hunt goes out there and gives Nick Chubb a rest. Chubb gets regenerated. Kareem Hunt wears down a defense, and they flip-flop. You must match their intensity when they're on the field, and you must match their energy. And the one thing you got to be able to do against them is to make sure that they don't hit things downhill. And that takes a lot against this offensive line, and especially against two fresh backs. And when they are fresh, they hammer the rock. You got to be able to bring everything you've got every single time to not allow a 2-yard run into a 5-yard run because your tackling's atrocious. Big boy pads needed. Number two, may the Schwartz not be with you. Now, if you remember the movie Spaceballs, that I believe was one of the, it was a playoff, may the force be with you. May the Schwartz be with you. Maybe I'm remembering it wrong. I thought it was Spaceballs. Maybe I could be completely wrong. But either way, the point being, Anthony Schwartz, a guy I just mentioned earlier in the show, rookie from out of Auburn. The Browns have found and created ways to get him the football. The Texans have to be aware of wherever he is on the field. Now, he is listed as questionable, but if he is out on the field, the Texans have to make sure they have a plan for number 10, Anthony Schwartz. Number three, fight smarter, not harder. And what I mean by this is this offensive line is extremely good and extremely physical, especially from guard to guard. From Betonio, Treader, and Teller, those guys will knock your you-know-what in the dirt. Well, the Texans aren't massive up front, but they are quick, and they are explosive, and they can win getting up the field. So you may not want to sit there and just trade body blows with them, and you might want to duck and dodge and then bang, hit them with an overhand right. You've got to fight smarter, not harder against them. Number four, 12 or 13, whatever it takes, and that has to do with the Browns' use of tight ends. The play I did for Telestrator is a throw to Anthony Schwartz, but they had three tight ends. They had 13 personnel on the field. And the Browns aren't scared to use all tight ends, all three tight ends, all at once. They can go out there with three tight ends and then go empty, and they have plenty of options in the passing game. Harrison Bryant, David Njoku, and Austin Hooper are as good a trio as you're going to find in the league. And the Browns aren't scared to use them. And they're going to get a tight end matched up on a linebacker. Linebackers have got to be excellent in coverage because that might be what's forced upon them because of the way the Browns use their tight ends. Number five is just Baker. I think he's come a long way. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Baker is the next coming of Tom Brady, but Baker does worry me because he's like a golfer in that he can hit the 350-yard drive and then follow it up with a 3-iron, another 200 yards with the ball within 5 feet of the hole in Eagle territory. He also, on that same hole, could hit one out of bounds and be hitting three, and he's still 400 yards from the hole. The consistency hasn't been there with Baker, but he's kind of honing in on it. But when he makes a mistake, you got to take advantage of it. If he throws you one, you got to make sure you catch it. You can't let it just, oh man, it's like last week, Shaquille Griffin had an opportunity against the Texans to have that pick on the first drive of the game. They dropped it. And you saw the game kind of went from there. If Baker throws you one, you got to make him pay. And he worries me. He worries me a lot. I don't think he'll run and kill you with the run, but he'll run when he has to, and that can be a problem. All right, flip it over to the Texans' offense against the Browns' defense. Now, this is a completely different story. They could have as many as 9 different starters, including Jadeveon Clowney, Malik McDowell, Greg Newsome, the rookie, Anthony Walker, a guy the Texans know from having been with the Colts, John Johnson at safety, and Troy Hill at corner. So the key is going against this Browns defense that only gave up 73 yards on the ground, but they did give up 324 through the air. That was Patrick Mahomes, so it's to be expected. Number one, pride won't block anyone. Here's what I mean by that. If you get to a point where you're like, hey, I got this. I can handle this guy, Myles Garrett, one-on-one. Well, Garrett's going to make you pay at some point because he's that good. If you do that with Jadeveon Clowney, same thing. We'll talk about JD in a little bit. But especially against Garrett, Laremy Tunsil can handle his own. There's no doubt. And Laremy is not one of those where, hey, I got to have Myles Garrett one-on-one, etc. But you're going to have to go one-on-one with him some. But don't be prideful to think that, hey, Laremy can't use the help. We'll just keep using help on the other side. No, give Laremy help when he needs it. Give him that help, whether it's a running back chip, whether it's a tight end over there. Give Laremy some help on Myles Garrett when it's needed. Give Marcus Cannon and Jerron Christian, whoever's playing right tackle, some help if Garrett lines up over there if needed. And that leads me to number two, Jadeveon Clowney. We know him, and we know his patterns, and he shows that he's still relatively the same guy that we saw in Houston, which is good and bad. He's still explosive. He's still mega talented. But you know his best pass rush move is that inside pass rush move. He's going to swim inside. Don't allow him. Set hard inside, make him go around you, and then wall him off. He's back fresh, but that's his move. We know it. You know it. Don't let him get to the quarterback. Number three, or in the running game. Keep on cooking. Keep cooking, as I put it. Brandon Cooks going against Denzel Ward, I said earlier. We talked about this in the first segment. That's going to be a whale of a matchup to watch. But keep attacking. I always hate the word decoy. Brandon Cooks can't be a decoy. I know Brandon Cooks doesn't want to be a decoy. Don't make it that way. Force feed the ball to number 13. He's one of your best offensive players, if not the best offensive player. Get him the ball. They're going to roll coverage and double him. Doesn't matter. Get him the ball. Find different ways where those doubles don't matter and you can get him the ball. Number four, what's good for the goose, as you know, is good for the gander. Why? What am I getting at here? The tight ends. The Browns have got three tight ends they can use. The Texans have a number of tight ends they can use. Jordan Akins, Farrell Brown in particular. Anthony Auclair comes in the game to be more of a blocker. But the Texans aren't scared to use 12 and 13 personnel either. And when they do, they've got a little bit more of a blocking component to it. But they still can stretch and throw the ball against it as they did in that third and one last week against the Jags to Farrell Brown down the field. Use it. Use those tight ends. It's okay to use two, three tight ends because that puts a defense in a bind. And last and certainly not least, keep them guessing, especially with the four running backs. Keep them guessing. Now I say four because those are the four that were active. Could be five. But if it's four again, that's fine. Keep spreading the wealth. Use David Johnson in the passing game. Use Phillip Lindsay and Mark Ingram in the Wildcat together. Keep mixing and matching your running backs. Keep them all fresh and put that same pain over on the other side the Texans are going to have to face with Chubb and Hunt. Make the defense for the Browns have to do the same. All right, those are my keys to the game. What does Jim Donovan, the voice of the Browns, think? Talk to him next right here on Texans All Access. Texans All Access. We've got 1 hour in the books, 1 hour left to go. And as we get into this second hour, I'm your host, John Harris, football analyst and sideline reporter. And I'm going to step aside because the two men that will call this game for their respective franchises are about to, well, on a football field, we call it swap some paint. But that's kind of in an adversarial situation. This is not so much adversarial. This is two men that have known each other for a long time and have been the longtime voices for their respective franchise. Mark Vandermeer for your Houston Texans and Jim Donovan of the Cleveland Browns. And he's always a guy I think about because he's been there through the lean years. And last year they get to the playoffs and they have this playoff wins and they're calling the games from home. I felt so bad that they had to do it that way. But I imagine that Jim Donovan pretty excited about what the Browns are bringing to the party, even at 0-1. So let's get to our men behind the mics with Mark Vandermeer and Jim Donovan.
Jim, losing to the Chiefs from afar, it just seems like, okay, you were right there. It's very disappointing, but it's a long season. How are the Browns taking this loss internally?
You know, Mark, I have to tell you, I think it's been a tough one for them to get out of their system and to move on, you know, and it would be advisable to move on and get ready for this one against the Texans. But I think like any opening game, you put so much into that game in preparation because you have so much time to get ready for that game. And they definitely were prepared. I think the fact that they were in such good control of the game for so long. I think they led for 53 minutes of the game, and how quickly it kind of imploded on them in the last couple of minutes of the game. I think that there was a shock value to it, that they had done so many good things, but the lesson is that you really have to learn how to finish the game. So I know that they're eager to get into that kind of a situation again and do better. So I think in that vein, it's been tough for them to put it beside them and put it aside and get ready for this one. But I think now, as we speak, I think they're on to the Texans to kind of use a Bill Belichick line.
All right, so when people ask you, what is the strength of the Browns offensively? Running game, passing game? I would maybe say yes, because it's a little bit of both. But what do you think? How would you describe that, Jim?
Yeah, I would think that, you know, the combination of Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt together, parlayed with a really good offensive line, that is the go-to button for them. That's the one that they push. That's the, if they are really kind of clicking offensively, that's the thing that is the engine that makes them go, is that running game. And the fact that they can come in with two really high-quality running backs and there's no drop-off makes it even more powerful for them. So I would have to say their running game is really kind of the meat and potatoes of what they do. Everything definitely feeds off of that. And I think even last Sunday in Kansas City, that running game was really strong to the point where they threw it well, but I think it was all set up because they were being so effective in their running game.
Jim Donovan, voice of the Cleveland Browns, joining us. Tell us about the growth of Baker Mayfield. Better in the second half last year than the first, so trending up. You have the playoff success, and now this year, I know it didn't go well last week, but what are we seeing in Baker Mayfield in year four?
You know, it was really amazing, Mark. From the bye week last week, last year, the bye week came, and he took off at that point. I mean, he was having a good season. He was definitely kind of a game manager. It was a new offense, and they were really leaning on the run game through the front half of the schedule last year. But from the point of the bye week, post-bye week, they came out. They played Cincinnati. It was interesting. It was the day they lost Odell Beckham Jr. on the first passing play of the afternoon. From that point on, he was red hot. And I think it was a comfort factor that he had the offense more, you know, in his head, that he was more comfortable with it. He was being coached really well. His head coach, you know, is his offensive coordinator in Kevin Stefanski, but he's got another offensive coordinator alongside Alex Van Pelt. They're really doing a very, very good job with him. His play action passing game became really excellent and everything kind of fell into place. He is definitely a guy that plays with a lot of momentum. I mean, he builds up a great deal of energy. And when he's going, I mean, he plays fast and his decisions are quick and he's got a great arm. And all of that just continued week by week last year. And even Sunday, I mean, I have never seen him better than he was in the first half of the game against Kansas City. I mean, he was right on target, great decisions, very, very quick of foot in the pocket. I mean, things were really good. The next step is for him, you know, to be able to put together that last drive, Mark, when the game is on the line and you need a touchdown to go down and score. He has to be able to do that, I think, to get to the level that he wants to get to. But so far, since Kevin Stefanski has come in and taken over as the head coach of the team, his arrow, meaning Baker Mayfield, has really shot up.
Jim Donovan, voice of the Cleveland Browns, joining us on Texans Radio. We know about some of the defensive players, of course, but Jadeveon Clowney, of great interest to the Texans fans. How's he fitting in, Jim?
You know, last week, it was kind of a strange week. He was sick most of the week, and it had nothing to do with COVID. I mean, he was under the weather last week, so he didn't practice a great deal leading up to the Kansas City game. It really didn't play out on the field that, you know, the image that the Browns wanted with Myles Garrett on one side and Jadeveon on the other side. And it didn't come to fruition last week. Now we'll see how it plays out this week and in the weeks following that. I think they're very excited to have him here. And I think he's very excited to be here. It seems as though he seems really excited to play alongside Myles Garrett. And it's a great 1-2 punch on paper. Now we'll see how it plays out on the field. Of course, he has to stay on the field to make it happen. And he had a very light training camp in the way that he didn't really participate an awful lot. And he didn't play in any of the preseason games. So I think we're all very interested to see how this thing plays out with him and how he's going to play. And hopefully it's going to be very good.
Jim, I know you get interviewed a lot about the Cleveland Browns, of course, asked a lot of the same types of questions, but you tell me something about this team, maybe a player or an aspect of the team that people don't talk about enough from the outside looking in.
I think it's a team right now, Mark, that was, you know, there are enough guys that were still on the team when it was really scraping the bottom of the barrel. I mean, I know the roster's been changed a great deal, and it's been upgraded tremendously. And that's one of the big reasons why they have had success now. But there are enough guys, the foundation guys, that were here still when they were kind of scuffling. And I think the fact that those guys really seem to appreciate the turn of a franchise and how a culture change can come into a franchise and really have a tremendous turn from a losing, beaten-up organization, kind of a laughable organization, the butt of a lot of jokes around the NFL, a one-win season, a winless season. I think those guys, when other guys come into the locker room and they listen to those guys how it was and how they appreciate how winning is here in the city of Cleveland and with the Browns, I think it's a great marriage. And I think that that's why the team has come together so much. And then in turn, with an incredible fan base, you put that together. It's been a fun thing to be a part of. It wasn't fun during those seasons when they were scuffling, and there were many of them, too many of them. But it's been fun to watch it turn around. And I think that those organizational guys that have been here for a period of time, I'm really happy for them. And I know their teammates are happy for them, too.
Jim, what about Kevin Stefanski and what he brings to the table as a head coach? We've seen his work as a coordinator and, of course, last year as the head coach, but what's it like being around him and the effect he has on the organization?
You know, Mark, I go back to when he was hired. It was kind of one of these situations where the Browns are going to hire Kevin Stefanski. It was the day after the Minnesota Vikings had lost to the San Francisco 49ers in the playoffs, and that made Kevin Stefanski readily available. And the year before that, Stefanski was a finalist for the Browns head coaching job, and instead they stayed in-house and they brought Freddie Kitchens up to the point of being the head coach of the team. So the day that it was announced Kevin Stefanski is going to be the head coach of the Browns, I have to tell you, a lot of people felt it was very underwhelming. I mean, they wanted a big name, a hot coordinator, you know, and they just didn't feel that it was happening. Okay, we're going to get this guy named Kevin Stefanski. Wow, since he has come in, he is an impeccably organized guy. He is just an amazing, you know, down to the every note, have this team fully prepared. And I think what happened, Mark, was that the roster felt like, hey, we're tired of losing and we've done it a million different ways. Let's listen to what this guy has to say and follow through with what he's teaching us. And maybe this might be the way it is to turn this thing around and start to become a winning team. He's incredibly composed. They are so perfectly prepared for games. And I thought they were impeccably prepared last week going into Kansas City and playing at Arrowhead Stadium. And that is the norm now with the Browns, that they go in and you know that they are ready for each game. And it plays out on the field. You know, they're not racking up a lot of penalties. They're not making a lot of mental mistakes. They practice very well. Their training camp was right down to the minute organized. And I think it's a good thing for them. He's been a breath of very, very needed fresh air here in Cleveland.
Jim Donovan, voice of the Cleveland Browns, joining us on Texans Radio. Tyrod Taylor, what do you remember about him, his time in Cleveland?
I just remember what a great pro he was, because it was an extremely difficult situation for him. I remember when the day came that they traded for him, John Dorsey pulled off the deal with the Buffalo Bills, and we were all excited and saw the vision of the plan as they stated it. And the plan was he was going to come in and play at least for 1 year, and they were going to draft a quarterback who eventually then became Baker Mayfield. And when he came in, he set a great example to Baker Mayfield and really everybody else on the team. I mean, the guy was in that facility at 5:30 every morning doing his workout and getting his physical work in and then going out on the field and doing what he does, which is a real pro. And, you know, it was very, very short-lived here in Cleveland, obviously, mm-hmm. because when you have a high draft choice, and in this case, the highest draft choice, the number one pick, and it's a quarterback, the town is salivating for that guy to get in. So, you know, he was playing in the preseason, and he was getting his work done. And that was the amazing thing about him. He just had a job performance in front of him, and he would go out and do it, and he would accomplish it, and he was just a real pro. And he did it pretty well. And the team just wasn't ready to win yet. I mean, they, and I don't think that they were ready to play behind and in front of Baker Mayfield either. But he went in. He didn't say anything about being yanked out. He went out because of injury on a Thursday night game against the Jets. It was game three of the season, and Mayfield came in, and this hurricane called Baker Mayfield blew into Cleveland, turned that around. The Browns finally won a game, and, of course, they, you know, put him in as the starting quarterback, and then he was off to the sideline. There was never a bad word said. There was no pouting. He was there if Baker needed him. I just I admire what he did, and I know, you know, the higher up offices in Berea appreciated what he did while he was here, though it was a brief period of time.
All right, one more rhetorical question, I guess. I mean, how hungry are the fans to get into the building and just be together for an NFL game in the regular season for the first time in a while?
Yeah, you know, Mark, when they finally made the playoffs last year, it was on the final Sunday of the regular season, and it was a win and you're in game, and they beat the Steelers that day to get into the playoffs. And it was a very, very emotional day because the Browns hadn't been in the playoffs since way back in the early 2000s, 18-year wait in between playoff appearances. And it was a great moment, and it was thrilling, and the game itself was thrilling to be able to punch your ticket and get into the playoffs. But there were only 12,000 people allowed in the building for that particular game and all of the other home games last year. So as great as it was, I kept saying to myself, and I know a lot of other people did too, can you imagine what it would have been like if we weren't involved and in the middle of this storm of a pandemic and the place had been packed? It would have been, you know, it would have been just crazy because here were the Browns finally making it to the playoffs. So I think people have been marking the days off until they can get into that stadium. And I think it's going to be a great, great scene. Much the way it was last week when, you know, when the Chief fans just packed Arrowhead Stadium. I don't know if we can reach those levels of decibels that we heard last week, but I think it will be pretty close. So I know that everybody is just very, very excited to get back in there and be able to cheer for this team and be able to experience hopefully winning football with this team.
I mentioned this a little earlier as we were talking about the Browns and how odd and weird last year actually was. They're kind of the same boat in some sense like Buffalo. And I've talked to my buddy Sal Capace, who's a sideline reporter for the Bills, about this. You know, they go through all this, and the Bills have such a strong fan base, you know, Bills Mafia. And they've got to have that year winning the AFC East without the Bills fans there. And they finally got a chance to go to the playoff game and see the Bills beat both the Colts and the Ravens. But it wasn't a full crowd. And now you get to start all that in 2021, and there's a part of me that really wants them to have success so those fans can experience that. Well, Kevin Stefanski said in his press conference about the Browns, he said, I've never coached in this environment when this place is full, and Browns fans are the dog pound, and they're feeling it. I'm not coached in that environment. So it's going to be very interesting on Sunday with a full crowd there, ripping and roaring, looking to see their guys back. The Browns 0-1 after a tough loss to Kansas City Chiefs. And going back and watching that game, they had every opportunity to win that game and just couldn't put that final just nail in the coffin for the Kansas City Chiefs. They left the door cracked just a little bit. And you do that, Mahomes, Kelce, and Hill are going to break it wide open. And they did and got the win. Now, the Browns have a lot of pressure, if that makes any sense. The Texans are 12.5-point dogs. What do they got to lose? Nobody thinks they're going to win. It's one of the highest spreads. People still think they're the 32nd team in the league, even though they manhandled Jacksonville. Definitely not going to beat Cleveland Browns. What do they got to lose? Cleveland's got the pressure. If this thing is close in the second half, guess who's carrying the pressure? They are. The Texans won't be. The Texans are going to be playing with house money. The Texans are going to be playing with house money for a good majority of the 2021 season. I'm totally fine with that. They love being the underdog. Go in that locker room and tell them, hey, you guys are the underdog. They'll be like, awesome, fantastic. We'll show them. And hopefully that's what ends up happening. Then in the second half, the Texans have shown them. And the Browns are sitting there going, man, we're down 7 with, I don't know, 5 minutes left to go in the third quarter. Holy cow, we're in trouble. And that creates issues. That's my hope. But a big thanks to Jim Donovan for stopping by on the show. I love Men Behind the Mics. In fact, that was my idea many, many years ago, to invite the play-by-play voice to spend a segment with our play-by-play voice, that being Mark Vandermeer. All right, the next segment is all me, because that means Well, I've got to pick games. I pick them straight up and against the spread. I love doing it. I'll make all my predictions next right here on Texans All Access. Oh, baby, we've gotten to that time of this show that I absolutely love. I love doing the whole show, don't get me wrong. But when I get to put my neck on the line and make some predictions, oh, baby, that's just the most fun for me. It's competitive. That's why I like it. So let's dive in. And if you're just joining me and wonder where you've been, but I'm glad you're here. I'm your host, John Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter for a Friday edition of Texans All Access. And one of the ways that I like to go around the NFL is to pick the games. Straight up and against the spread. I don't know, maybe you learned something about the game. This is not meant for you to go out and gamble and do all that. But I just like picking these games. And so I figured, hey, let's do it straight up and against the spread. Some of you like to know that stuff. If you use it, that's up to you. Don't care. But I like to pick these games. So, cue up my music, and there it is. And let's get to these games. And let's start in Chicago, where the Bears return home after a Sunday night thrashing at SoFi Stadium, opening up SoFi Stadium with fans. They return 0-1 to take on the Bengals. 1-0, Chicago's favored by 2.5. Now, the old adage goes that 3 points usually goes to the home team. Usually. So Vegas actually thought the Texans were a 6-point underdog last week at home, and that didn't go well. But either way, Chicago's 2.5 point. So essentially, Vegas sees these two teams as even. There's one major discrepancy, and that's at quarterback. And that's why I'm going with the Chicago Bears. Yeah, I can't do it. I can't do Cincinnati 2 weeks in a row. Cincinnati had a big win last week, beating the Vikings. Team thought to be number two, I would guess, over in the NFC North. Well, they beat, the Bengals do, beat the Vikings in overtime, 27-24. I don't think they're going to repeat that, although I don't think this will be a very high-scoring game. I think the Bears are going to get this one at home, because if they don't, it is trouble in the Windy City. Bears win. Bears cover that 2.5. Texans-Browns, it's now up to 13. Cleveland a 13-point favorite. I don't pick heart and head, you know, the whole thing. I've told you that before. But let's go up there, see what we can do. The game taking place in Indy. Indy got 2 straight home games. They got sauced last week by the Seahawks. Now the Rams come in feeling good. Matt Stafford looked tremendous. The Rams offense unveiled another layer because of Stafford. Rams 1-0 after beating the Bears. The Colts 0-1 after losing the Seahawks. Carson Wentz, I watched that game and I just went, I don't know. I kind of had that Larry David expression like, yeah, maybe. That's kind of the way I felt watching. I just don't know that I trust the Colts fully. But I don't love road favorites. Especially one like the Rams. But I'm not buying the Colts. So I'm in a quandary here. The Rams are favored by 3.5. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take the Rams to win this thing, but it to be a 3-point difference. That's enough to get under the number. So let's go Rams to win outright, but the Colts to cover getting inside the 3.5. That's kind of splitting on both sides. I just don't know which team I can trust at this point, to be brutally honest. All right, let's go down to Miami. Where news this week that Will Fuller will be stepping away from the team for this game in particular, dealing with some personal issues, and hope all is well for Will. I know from an off-the-field perspective, Will was always a stand-up guy here with the Texans, and rooting for him and hope everything is okay with him. But the Dolphins, at that point, with no speed threat on the outside, they do have Jalen Waddle, so they do have some playmakers. They only scored 17 points last week and win over the Patriots. I think they'll need more against the Bills. I don't think they can produce that at this point. So the Bills 0-1 go down to Miami, and the Bills will get this win. They're a 3-point favorite on the road. I'm taking the Bills to win and to cover that 3. Speaking of the AFC East, the other two AFC East teams meet in New Jersey, where the Jets and Zach Wilson, a solid finish to the game last week against the Carolina Panthers. But unfortunately, they still took the L. The Patriots, man, had some moments, but couldn't put the Dolphins away. Lost that one 17-16. So I was going to say one of these teams is going to come up with a win, but it could be a tie, which would be awesome, but not going to happen. The Patriots, a six-point favorite in New Jersey, are going to take this win. They're going to win this thing by seven, a touchdown or more. So let's go Patriots to win and cover on the road. Man, all these road favorites. And here's another one in Philadelphia. And I think this is just a case of Las Vegas not really knowing how to handle this one with the San Francisco 49ers going to take on the Philadelphia Eagles. The 49ers put up 41 points last week in Detroit, and the game was really a runaway, but then the Lions actually got back in it at the end when the Niners let off the gas. The Eagles didn't let off the gas once. Housed the Atlanta Falcons 32-6 on the road. Jalen Hurts looked great. Devontae Smith caught a touchdown pass from him in the same exact spot that he won the national championship game against Georgia back in 2017. But the Eagles at home, you would think after a performance like that and not really knowing what the Niners are all about, no. Vegas says that San Francisco is a three-point favorite. Again, a road favorite, which means I'm going Eagles. I think the Eagles playing back home, again, kind of, I don't want to say kind of like the Texans, but, you know, playing a little bit of house money. Jalen Hurts, you know, they'll trade for a quarterback, maybe a quarterback. We know Jalen Hurts just steps up, does his job every single week. I love that guy. I absolutely love Jalen Hurts. Love him. He's everything that football players should be about. And I love the fact that he's from the greater Houston area. They're at Channelview. So I'm going Eagles in an upset to win and obviously to cover with that little three-point spread. Finally, a home favorite, the Raiders taking on the Steelers. So the Raiders play an overtime game Monday night, somehow find a way to win. They got to fly cross country into the Eastern time zone and take on the Steelers, a 6.5-point favorite. Look, the Steelers' offense is going to be kind of a ragged, haggard mess all year, to be honest. But the defense is legit. There's no doubt about the defense. The defense, Cameron Hayward and TJ Watt were unbelievable against the Bills. The main reason why they ended up winning that game, defense, and then, of course, a big special teams play that put the Steelers in the lead, and they held on to it. I'm going with the Steelers to win this thing, and I think they're going to win this thing by 10. It's going to be, I don't know, 24-14, something of that ilk. I don't think the Raiders are going to move the ball effectively against the Steelers, and I think the Steelers are going to win that and cover it at home. I think that negative body clock and having played on Monday night is going to work against the Raiders, so take the Steelers. All right, let's go to Charlotte for this next one because the Carolina Panthers 1-0. Really good win on the road at the Jets. Sam Darnold looked good, hit his buddy Robbie Anderson for a touchdown. Second half, Jets started chipping away, just couldn't chip away enough. So the Panthers get the win. But the Saints had maybe the most dominant win all weekend. They were unbelievable. 38-3 in Jacksonville. I mean, they were dealing with the hurricane that knocked them out of New Orleans, basically. It sent LSU here to Houston. New Orleans was looking for, you know, a place to reside. I think New Orleans ended up going to Dallas. Can't totally remember exactly where they went. Anyways, the fact that the Saints played a home game in Jacksonville and completely spanked the Packers, there's something to be said for that team. However, check this out. On Sunday, the following will not be in attendance due to COVID-19 protocols. Offensive analyst Jim Chaney, Declan Doyle, offensive assistant Phil Galliano, assistant special teams, Curtis Johnson, senior offensive assistant wide receivers coach, Brendan Nugent, offensive line coach, Dan Ruchard, run game coordinator and tight ends, Joel Thomas, running backs. None of them will be there due to COVID-19 protocols. Zach Strief is the assistant O-line coach. You know what he was doing last year? He was the play-by-play voice for the Saints radio network. This Sunday, he will be coaching the offensive line as the only offensive line coach because Brendan Nugent is out. The team also plays defensive end Marcus Davenport, Quan Alexander, unreserved, injured. The Saints are shorthanded. And yet, there's a part of me that thinks they're going to cover this. They're a 3.5-point favorite in Charlotte. And I'm not totally all the way there on the Panthers, but man, the Saints looked really, really good last week. And they did it with defense. And I think that's where it goes again. I think the Saints win this game shorthanded with an offensive coaching staff that'll come together. The Saints win this. They cover that 3.5, and they send Carolina here to Houston smarting a little bit with that Thursday night game coming up on the 23rd, if my math is correct. Yes, the 23rd. Saints win and cover on the road. How about that? Another noon game is going to take place down in Jacksonville. It'll be 1 p.m. local. Jacksonville, the home game for the second straight week. Well, the city of. This time, it's their Jaguars. Off a pounding from the Texans, the Denver Broncos, who had a great win against the New York Giants, the New Jersey Giants. The Broncos went up to New Jersey and beat up on the Giants pretty solidly. They're 1-0. Jaguars 0-1. Denver's a 6-point favorite, and that to me is tricky. Because I got a feeling if the Jaguars are going to win a game, it's going to be after a performance that they had in week one. I don't think the Jaguars are very good. I do think they have talent. I do think they play this game like it is a Super Bowl. So you know what? I'm going Jags to get inside the six with the Broncos to eke one out. I think that's what the Jags lack. Can they get over the top and win some games? They have won one in, 16 straight games. So I'm going Broncos to win. However, the Jaguars are going to get inside that six. The Vikings travel to the Cardinals in an afternoon tilt. The Vikings just got beat by Cincinnati. The Cardinals put an absolute trouncing on the Titans in Tennessee. For some reason, Arizona is only a 3.5-point favorite. Fire, 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 fire on the Cardinals to win and cover that 3.5. Are you kidding me? There is no way the Cardinals at 3.5. That number is grossly low. Holy smokes. All right, let's go down to Tampa Bay. Tom Brady says he's going to play until he's 50. Well, he just has to play another week. The Falcons look like absolute horse manure against the Eagles. And I do think that Arthur Smith and the Falcons will move it back in the other direction, but not enough. Tampa Bay's favored by 12.5. They'll win this thing by 17. I'm going 31-14. Tampa Bay wins and covers at 12.5. The Cowboys, they go to California for training camp every year. Well, they're going back to California. Going back to Cali. Take on the LA Chargers. Justin Herbert, Brandon Staley, head coach, gets a win in his debut against Washington. The Chargers are favored by 3.5, and I think that's low. The Cowboys look good on the road, but they threw it, and they've got a bunch of guys out, though. DeMarcus Lawrence is out. Michael Gallup is out. They're going to be hurting. I think the Chargers win that thing, and they win it by more than 3.5. Late afternoon game, Titans, Seahawks. The 12th, The 12s up in Seattle have been waiting to see their guys. They didn't get a chance to see them all last year. They're going to be jacked and ready to go after the Seahawks beat the Colts last week in Indy. Tennessee looked awful in a loss to the Cardinals. Now, I think Tennessee will bounce back and play better, but the Seahawks play in front of their home crowd. They'll rely on that energy. Seattle's favored by 6.5. I think the Seahawks cover that. This feels 30-23, 38-31 sort of game. Either way, the Seahawks will cover that by a touchdown, winning by 7, so they'll cover that. Seahawks to win and cover. Sunday night game. Ooh, baby. The Chiefs are taking on the Ravens. Now, the Ravens shot both their feet off last week, both their talons, if you will. They had every opportunity to win that game against the Raiders and just couldn't finish. The Chiefs found a way to finish, and I think that's the difference here. The Ravens have not beaten the Chiefs since Lamar took over at quarterback. He is 0-3 against Mahomes and the Chiefs, and I think he remains winless. The Ravens are a 3.5-point dog. I'm taking the Chiefs to win and to cover. And Monday night, we could probably talk about this a little bit more on Monday, but I don't know how excited I'm going to be for Lions-Packers. Oh, who am I kidding? I love old NFC Central battles. Lions-Packers, I'll be geeked about that. The Packers are 11.5-point favorite at home. Lay those things all day. The Packers are going to come back with a vengeance. This feels 42-21. Lions defense, struggling. And Jeff Okuda out. I think the Packers will light up the scoreboard and get back in the win column and even the record at 1-1, making Aggie Dan Campbell 0-2. All right, coming up next, Drew Doherty, Danny Amendola, not Aggies, are going to wax poetic about this weekend of football against the Cleveland Browns. That's next on Texans All Access. Texans All Access. Texans All Access. We got one final segment of this Friday edition of Texans All Access from the Hyundai Texans Radio Studio. I am your host, John Harris, football analyst and sideline reporter. And each and every week, I save the final segment and I save the final word for Drew Doherty. We get interviews during the week. I break things down, but I always save the last segment for Drew Doherty. Now, a really interesting dynamic has sort of evolved, if you will, on this particular season. And that is, Drew gets an opportunity to do a Drew's Dozen, and then he sticks around and he does a pregame interview with that particular player. So they get a little nutty with the Drew's Dozen, and then they come back and they're like, okay, serious face, let's talk football. And so he talked with Danny Amendola earlier, doing a Drew's Dozen, and now we flip it, and now we talk a lot of football with Danny Amendola. Here's Drew Doherty in the final word with Danny Amendola.
Wow, what a whirlwind, sort of 10 days this has been for you. How are you? What's going on, and what's it been like just the last two game weeks?
I'm great, first of all. Thanks for asking. It's great to see you again.
Yes.
And the past 10 days really have been kind of a whirlwind for me, just trying to get acclimated with the city, get acclimated with the playbook, my teammates, all the staff here in the building, and everything's been smooth. This is a great organization starting from the top, and I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, you know, we heard you last week meeting with the media before the game. You were talking about how this offense is very similar to ones you've been in the past in New England. There was a package installed for you, and oh, ho-hum, you come out, you catch five passes, one of them's a touchdown, you help move the chains on the other four. How much more have you grasped of this offense since then, since the game, and how much more are you growing in it, you think?
Every day is a process, really. You know, I'm trying to absorb as much information as I can, ask as many questions as I can, and try to just learn and grow and kind of conform to being a good teammate here and learning my role, understanding my role with this team, and try to expand that and try to grow and try to help this team win.
What's the biggest challenge for you and all that? Because I imagine you got to go back to your first year you actually played on a 53-man roster in 2009 with the Rams, joined them, same sort of time frame period. What's the biggest challenge in all this?
A lot of the verbiage here is a little different than what I'm used to in past offenses, although there's formations that are the same, although the verbiage is cut down and reduced. So as long as I understand the origin of how the play call is getting to what it is now, and then it helps me understand a lot. So if I kind of, you know, backtrack, and there's a lot, Coach McDaniels here is kind of helping me break down, you know, how they got to where they are now, and when I can understand how they got here is when it all clicks for me. So just a lot of great coaches here helping me out. I got a lot of questions, and they've made the process really smooth so far.
How'd that first catch feel?
Great, man. You know, I wasn't on a team this whole summer, this obviously the past 7 months, so I was dreaming about getting back on the field and catching the ball. And Tyrod, the first ball I caught, I knew I was going to get the ball really before the play started.
Just because of what you saw?
Yeah, the coverage they were playing, and I knew I had a chance to get the ball. And it all kind of happened in slow motion, and I remember saying to myself, all right, here it comes. And then I just caught it and kind of snapped into football mode, and then it, you know, all happened after that. So
now, seeing that and knowing that the ball was going to come your way, did you know that back when you were a rookie? Did you know stuff like that, or is this just because of time and acclimation in the system and all that stuff?
That and experience, really, in learning conceptually how the plays are called, what the play is meant to, how the play is meant to run versus a specific coverage and vice versa, and it was just a zone hitch and easy pitch and catch and end up working out.
Yeah, let's talk about this Cleveland Browns defense. What stands out to you when you look at them after what you saw against the Chiefs last week?
Yeah, they got some playmakers, man. They fly around. They're well coached. You know, they play good defense. They're playing at home now. It's going to be a loud crowd, so we got to deal with being on the road, playing in the elements, and they're going to be juiced up coming back, you know, off that close game with the Chiefs. So they fly around, man. They got a bunch of great athletes, bunch of great defensive football players. So, you know, we got to really grind this week, try to get in a good position against them. So
now, I'm not asking for specifics or anything like that, but being in a game plan offense, how much different is it this week versus what you did against Jacksonville?
You look at it and you go into any game, what you as an offense, you try to determine what coverages they're going to play leading into the game. You try to narrow it down in what specific situational kind of football they play. So we're going to run the stuff that they've been practicing. We've been practicing for the entirety of camp, entirety of the preseason, and try to stick with the plays, obviously, that we know. We probably got some new stuff in there, some things that work against the specific coverages that we think they're going to play. So just like any game, just try to pick your spots, try to win as much as possible in every area, every position, and try to, you know, create good matchups against the other guys. So they got a good team. They fly around, and they play good D. So
they sure do. They got a nasty front, man, with Clowney and Garrett and the rest of the guys in between them. All right. Now let's see how you're powering game day. Danny Amendola, do you have any game day superstitions?
I tell you the truth, I don't. I don't. I kind of try to stay. I have a routine, so to speak, but, you know, not too many superstitions. I think I had more superstitions when I was younger.
Yeah.
And then I kind of learned that you kind of get stuck in these different kind of modes. One thing goes wrong, then another thing goes wrong, then your head's out of the, you know, the proper headspace before the game even starts. So I just try to come in to the game as free as I can, you know, of distractions, of try to eliminate all of those things and just get ready, get my body ready, get my mind ready, and go.
What sort of music you listen to on game day?
Chill, man. I like chill music, and if any music at all, I used to go out in pregame warm up and blare music in my headphones and get all emotionally juiced up before the game started. But I've kind of noticed that works against me, kind of exhausts me a little bit. So as much as I can kind of be calm in the right state of mind going into the game, and then obviously during the game, just burn it out. You know, it's obviously very taxing on my body. So just try to use all the energy in a proper way.
Yeah, I don't think I've talked to a player who has at least like 4 or 5 years of experience in quite some time who has ever answered that question with music other than something very, very calm like you're talking about. So I think it sounds like you learn and you go from there.
No doubt.
All right, last thing, what do you eat before a game? Like, say it's a noon game. What do you eat?
Noon game, I like to eat. I love bacon and eggs when I wake up. My little secret weapon is French toast with peanut butter and jelly on it. Ooh. No syrup or butter, just peanut butter and jelly. Kind of give you that proper energy long term for the game and keep it rolling. So
there you have it, kids. PB&J on a French toast, and you will become like Danny Amendola, NFL receiver. All right, my friend, good luck on Sunday. Best of luck against the Browns, and best of luck the rest of the season.
Thank you, Drew. Appreciate it.
Okay, can we rewind just a little bit? Did he say French toast with peanut butter and jelly? Danny Amendola is an absolute genius. Now, I will tell you, beyond a shadow of a doubt, I love a grilled PB&J. You know, like a grilled cheese, but a grilled PB&J. Mom's, Ms. Harris, has been doing this for a long time for me. I love it. Now, people in my family, not the biggest fan of certain foods, and PB&Js don't always hit. So whenever I'm in a kitchen making some things, I love to make, especially in the fall and the winter, I love to make me some grilled PB&Js. But the French toast with the PB&J as a PB&J, Danny Amendola, you, my friend, are a visionary. And I absolutely love it. Speaking of love it, I love the fact that you guys were here with me this evening. And I had a lot of friends. I had DP Sidhu and Brandon Cooks here. I had Mark Vandermeer, David Culley here. I had Mark Vandermeer along with Jim Donovan here. We had Drew Doherty and Danny Amendola here twice. Got my man Robert Harris back in studio. Got all you listening. I got everything that I could possibly want, minus one. And that would be a W on Sunday against the Browns. Texans, 12.5-point underdogs. That hasn't stopped them before. This is a very talented Browns team. I would say a desperate Browns team to make sure they get that win. If it's a team that's thinking along the lines of what I heard all week in Cleveland, they're thinking about number one seed, getting a bye, all that kind of stuff. Now, obviously, the loss to Kansas City doesn't help. But how about a loss to the Texans? And what a statement that would make around the league. Well, you're playing with house money. Nobody expects you to win. Go out there and play your ass off and see what happens. We'll see you on Sunday. 9 o'clock to 12 o'clock pregame show. 12 o'clock, we take over. Mark Andre and myself with the game broadcast. And then you got the postgame show after that, Sean and Clint, to take you through the rest of the evening. And hopefully there will be great news that they are talking about during that postgame show. Y'all are the best. We'll see you Sunday. And as always, go Texans.